This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello, halflings! It's me, Jasper William Cartwright, and I am joined today by...
Leandro Nati Losnyao, but everybody calls me Unati!
And...
Jeremy Cobb, but Amy Vorpal calls me Jeremy Feed Him Cobb.
We told it on the episode. So if you want context for that, go listen to our interview with Amy Vorpal. It was possibly one of the funniest times me and Jeremy have ever spent together.
I'd say number two. Number two or number three?
Number two.
We had the most, I feel like we had the number one recently.
Yes, recently on the phone whilst discussing Christian Bale.
Yes.
Speaking of interviews and guest interviews, we have another one for you today. I am so, so excited to welcome the DM of High Rollers. That is right, Mark Holmes is here with us today. How are you doing? Oh.
Thank you very much. Well, that is the most excitable introduction I think I've ever had. Wonderful. And you nailed my name, which most people never get right as well. So absolutely well done. Thank you very much.
Oh my God!
This is the wrong dungeon and the wrong dragons.
Full prince vibe? Woof.
This makes them even more black.
Cake glitches and pitches.
Lands in the cusp of a teaspoon.
Oh, no.
On a nat 20.
No!
You think this is just a game?
That's disgusting and I love it.
Yeah. We're about to get into something real big now.
Really great to actually get to chat to you guys and be on the show. I know this is something we've been talking about trying to make happen for a while, and like all sorts of life stuff comes in and out, so it's really cool to get to chat to you guys.
It's awesome, and it feels great to have a fellow Brit on. We just don't have enough Brits on the show. I mean,
that's true.
Yes. It's all Americans. Yeah. It's all Americans.
I'm trying to think. Who else have we had from Britain on this show?
I don't know.
Well, there's not many of us in the UK, especially in the D&D sphere. Yeah. Like, there's, you know, it's growing. Like, you know, there's more of us, you know, growing and more shows popping up and kind of getting, people are becoming aware of, but there's really not many of us. And that's another reason why I wanted to come on. Like, I really want to really start kind of pushing and promoting, like, that there's some really good D&D stuff going on in the UK, and, like, we should all be working together to do cool stuff.
It'd be great to do some in-person stuff where I don't have to, cross the Atlantic.
Absolutely. Well, maybe we can make that happen, because I think there's, you know, we've got some studio stuff here, but we're also looking at some cool things we can do as well. So we can definitely try and make that happen.
Very, very exciting. And yeah, just absolutely thrilled to get to talk to you today. This is very, very cool. So, Mark, we always start with our guests kind of at the beginning. We like to ask a bit of like an origins story, if you will. And that can be your origin story for D&D. It can be your origin story for just like nerddom in general.
How did you get your superpowers?
How did I get my you can thank ADD for my superpowers, but I think in general the whole like the nerd origins, I think that was literally instilled in me from birth. I don't remember a time where I wasn't interested in nerdy stuff. You know, some of my earliest memories go back to being sort of a little kid in my grandparents' garden, pretending to be a knight with a dustbin lid and a stick and doing all of that stuff. Like, I've always been playing pretend and, you know, Warhammer video games, everything. Like, as soon as I could touch it, I was into it. I don't really know where to begin with that, but the D&D stuff I definitely remember, and I've told this story a lot on podcasts and things like that before. And it's not particularly, you know, it's I don't think it's particularly unique, but like a lot of people, I was into stuff like Warhammer and, you know, things like that, video games. And then we used to go to a comic shop. I used to live in Southend-on-Sea in Essex. Okay. And me and all my school friends, you know, we played Magic the Gathering. We did drama and theater together. And we would go to this little comic book shop to buy magic cards and to look at what anime and manga they had and comic books. And we saw that they had the D&D 3rd edition starter set. And we'd all known about D&D. We'd seen like it on TV shows and in cartoons and stuff. But we'd never played it. And we were like, we could all chip in. And we all kind of like chipped in some of our lunch money and pocket money. And we bought this like £20 starter set. We rushed it home, opened it up. None of us had a clue what we were doing. And reading through the books, it was like, somebody needs to be the dungeon master. And then we all looked around at each other, and it was kind of like a rock, paper, scissors. who's gonna suffer being this dungeon master while the others get
Little
to be the
did
cool
you know
player
it would
characters
be forever?
Yeah, right. That's exactly it. Right. That was the point. That was like the moment where you know the big options in the video game come up, and it's like you know save before you proceed because you don't get to change.
Red pill or blue pill time.
I took on dungeon master role, and then that was it. Really, played all through high school. You know, it would be. You know, we'd finish high school and college, go straight home, eat dinner, rush to our mate's house where he had like a big dining room and we would sit there and play until 2 a.m. and then come home, sleep, go to school, do the same thing again the next day. And that just continued. And then when I eventually started working in the video games industry, D&D became my way of socializing. It became my way of kind of getting to know people as like a, you know, a very self-conscious, shy nerd working with a bunch of other people. I was like, I don't know how to talk to people. I don't know how to interact with humans. Have you ever played D&D? Would you like to play D&D? And that was like my way of making friends, basically. And then it just rolled on from there. You know, it just continued and continued. And like, you know, me and my school friends, we did sort of swap around the DM role. I did get to be a player for a little while, at least.
Before
I was locked in. I know, only for a short time and only 20 years ago. 20 years from then, it's been Dungeon Master, Dungeon Master, Dungeon Master. But I have gotten the odd occasion to be a player, which has been very, very lovely, especially with some of the cool people I've gotten to meet in the DM.
It's like Atlas when he hands off the world to Heracles for like just a second, and he's like, oh, yeah. And then he's like, no, at the end. But at least he got to stop holding the world for like a minute. Had a brief glimpse.
But is it worse? There's definitely an element of that. Because then you get when you get the world back, you suddenly realize just how heavy it is. You know what I mean? Like maybe it's better to have never relinquished it at all. I don't know.
And you know, joking aside, I love DMing. Like you know, I don't want people to think that like I hate it. You know, I love it, but it is quite nice to just let the pressure go off the old shoulders for a while and just cause chaos in somebody else's game for a little bit.
Well,
that
raises quite an interesting thing because like, what would you say are like the biggest differences between DMing and playing? Because I think that one of the huge things with my experience is that like I get the freedom to feel like not every decision I make is gonna screw up in some big way or come back to bite me in the ass like in, you know, in a couple sessions time when I say, oh yeah, sure, you grab the book. Oh fuck, that's a really important book. I shouldn't have given them that book. You know what I mean? Like it's like I don't have that pressure. That's basically what being a player is for me. But like what do you feel like it is for you? What's like the thing that you enjoy most when you do eventually get to play?
I think it's that lack of knowing, and also that I know I can just turn up and play. You know, in a lot of the times with the DM, I spend a lot of time doing a lot of prep. I love to prep. You know, I know that there are GMs and DMs out there who fully love the improv stuff, but I love to prep, and so I'll do a lot of work beforehand. Whereas with a player, I've just created this one person, and I can shape and come up with loads of cool ideas for them. But then it's like, I'm kind of handing the reins over a little bit where I'm like, now I don't know what's going to happen now. Like you show me this cool world and I'm going to prod things and pull levers and I'm going to touch stuff because I want to see what it's going to happen and I want to interact with people in that sense. Whereas with a DM, it's like I want the players to do that to me so that I can react and give them stuff, you know, and showcase the world kind of thing.
You have to constantly be on your toes, I think, as a DM, right? Like you can't, you can't like take a seat. Like the only times I ever find you can do that is when when you're like a really high RP table. And like two players are just like going off and you're like, okay, I'm just going to sit back and enjoy this. I'm going to get my popcorn out for just a second.
I got my popcorn. I got my drink. I'm just going to sit back and just watch. That's actually like my favorite thing. Like when my players take those moments, I love it. I love it.
Yeah, for sure. I always try to challenge my players to like take the floor. Cause you know, I think it's like why going to like hometowns and things like that are always fun. Cause you can kind of give players that a little bit of agency to kind of, you know, like you kind of said, to, like take the reins.
Well, you tell us.
Yeah. You tell us what's there. Then they go a little too far. And you're like, whoa, well, actually, no, there's...
Well, you
know, have the fastest horses in the world. They're just fast horses in your home.
They're very good horses.
Yeah. And you don't own all of them. Okay, let's just clarify
this. My horse can talk.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're world renowned for talking flying horses.
You think so? You definitely. Yeah. That's what the hometown believes. But the rest of you is just a normal horse.
It's just a bunch of people walking around, like going, all thinking that they're talking to the horse in like fluent horse.
I'm very lucky. I've only had one player who's ever done that. Like, sort of, they were very, this was like a one shot I did for some friends, not streamed or anything like that. I gave them the opportunity of, I just kind of said like, oh, I introduced them and said, yeah, you come off of your, this was a Star Wars game we were playing. And I said like, oh, you come off your ship. And then I provided a problem. I think they had to get somewhere. And this one player was just like, well, luckily I have a bunch of speeders from the previous job that we were doing, and just made up a bunch of stuff on the spot. And I was just sort of like, the audacity.
Yeah.
But I just was like, yeah, you absolutely do have speed. They're not in very good condition, though. You're not sure how well they're going to hold up on the icy plains of Hoth or whatever they were on. And I think that they took that as like a, yes, I'm not the dungeon master. I was just like, I love the idea. I love the suggestion. And we could create some really cool stories with it. But I'm still the DM.
Yeah, I think I'd have made them like roll straight luck checks. Like anything below a 13 and your speed are just straight doesn't work.
Like, that one, they seem to be in working order, but they all explode as soon as they, like...
The second they get, like, to over 55 miles an hour, you know, it activates the bomb.
It turns into speed, and you can't slow down after that. You have to just keep, driving them across Hoth. At 88 miles an hour.
Love that. That's actually a really good adventure hook. If anybody's running a Star Wars game, you should absolutely just rip off the movie Speed and put it in Star Wars. Right. That's
you
a very
can't
good.
Come out of light speed. It's like if you exit light speed, it's like you instantly die. Yeah,
that very good. Cool. Very good.
That'd be very,
I love
very
it.
Cool. Well, I think one of the things that I would love to know, and I'm sure our listeners would like to know, is we would obviously what was like what led to or what was the start of High Rollers? Because like you said before, there's not a whole lot of British shows. So what was the inspiration for that?
Yeah.
So,
It's really cool. And for those who don't know, if you don't know High Rollers, that's the show I DM. It's with a bunch of my friends here in the UK. And we started it about 5 years ago now, which blows my mind. We've been doing it for that long. But I was working at the time. I was the social media manager for the YouTube network, the Yogscast. And my fiance is an artist there. And so, you know, we were working there together at the time. And I was running D&D for some friends, some other YouTube creators who are part of the network and things like that. And every December they do a big charity event called the Jingle Jam, where they raise loads of really good money. You buy like a bundle of games and all the proceeds basically go to charity, and they do like a whole month of streaming. And we did some like silly Star Wars D&D one shots and things like that. But after the Jingle Jam was all finished, the owner of the company was like, listen, you know, we're gonna start doing much more regular streams, would you like to do a D&D thing? And I'd been watching, you know, I've been friends with Matt Mercer for a long time, and I, you know, had been watching Critical Role and I loved it. And a bunch of my other friends were like really into it at the time. And we said, yeah, we could do something like that. We didn't think it would be a big thing. We thought like, we'll probably do it for like a couple of months. The viewers will die off and then they'll want to do something else. They'll want to replace us with something else on the streaming schedule. But we thought we'd give it a go and see how it went. So we got a bunch of us together, a couple of people who had never played D&D before, a couple of people who'd played a little bit, and then Kim, who I know you guys have met. Kim had played when she was much younger, but hadn't played for a very long time. So we kind of got everyone together and we thought, yeah, we'll give this a go and see how it does. You know, and it was like on a Sunday, we thought nobody's going to be watching a stream on a Sunday. But, you know, that was the time we were given. So we were like, sure, we'll give this a go. And yeah, it just did phenomenally better than anybody ever expected. Like, we didn't expect that many people to like really get invested in it. I think for a lot of people, it was their first time seeing like a full game of D&D in a stream like that. You know, even though there were other shows like Ak Inc. and Taz and Crit Roll going on, a lot of the people that tuned in had never seen anything like it before. And it was very, it was just something new and fresh, and it just took off. And then from there, we just you know, kept going, and eventually we built it in, and then eventually got to the point where I left my full-time job as a social media manager and just became a self-employed content creator and the director of High Rollers, and we've basically just been running it that way ever since, really. So yeah, it was a real meeting of like years and years of playing D&D for fun, meeting this like very rare opportunity to like fill in this like gap in the streaming schedule, and then it just worked, and then that kind of took off, basically. Yeah. So very, very fortunate to have that opportunity. And then I think it was a mixture of like having good people, good chemistry, and a lot of practice as a GM.
That's
as
really
well,
interesting. So. Like that's, I've noticed a pattern with the early period D&D actual play shows with you all, and then Critical Role, and also Taz. All of those games started as like, yeah, you know, we're just going to do like a little thing. We'll see. Probably is not going to catch on. Like,
people probably aren't going to care.
Taz
about
was
it.
Explicitly supposed to be a one shot and didn't even have its own podcast. And you, both you and Critical Role were like, yeah, you know, people probably, we'll see.
We'll see. With Crit Roll, like, those guys were with Geek and Sundry at the time. And it was the same idea of like, well, you know, why don't you try streaming it? We'll see how it does. And, you know, there is this thing of like, if it doesn't do very well, we'll, you know, you can
and
move on and do
okay.
something else.
I've heard like,
yeah, I've heard
like
it does okay.
For like
an
animated show on like Amazon.
Yeah, did somebody rip different. Them off or something? Is that what
something
happened?
Must have been. Just, it can't be the same.
Parallel thinking.
Yeah,
but it's like a gold rush. It's like you all were the early prospectors who like happened to stumble. You're like, yeah, let's go see the hills, and you
very
accidentally
much
stumbled.
So.
And now there's been a huge gold rush, and the market has become really saturated.
Well, I think, you know, and it all ties back into this, and I've long held this, like, I think this newer generation, this new surge of D&D, whether people playing it or streaming it or whatever, it's because we live in a time where for the first time, you can actually see what playing D&D is like. It's not just a thing that you have to read a big chunky rule book to learn how to play. You can actually watch real people with real friends and real chemistry sit down and have a laugh. And it's not like, I cast magic mithril at the darkness and I want to sleep with the barmaid, please. You know, the media kind of portrayed it to be. You can actually see a bunch of like, just nerdy friends having a laugh and like mucking about and having a really good time. But also it's a great way to learn the very basics of the rules, like you roll a dice, you add a number, that means you succeed or fail, and there are monsters and combats and stuff like that. And I think that really was just like, oh, this is what D&D is. Oh, awesome. And like people could invest themselves in that. And then, yeah, people, when they start playing, the next evolution is, I want to stream it. I want to share this game with the world.
That was exactly how I learned. Like, I literally learned playing D&D for the most part from watching Dimension 20 and then listening to NADPOD. And I think I've said this on the show, I've literally never read the entirety of a D&D book. I only go to them for the stuff that I specifically want.
I don't even think I've ever opened the player's or the DM's handbook. Like, I generally don't think I have. God, that sounds like blasphemy, doesn't it? Like, well, I'm going to get immediately cancelled off of the show. And Artie's like, yeah, we need to get rid of Jasper now. Like,
I don't think I've ever sat down and read through the Dungeon
Master's
Guide.
Yeah, I think
Master's
I've looked
guide.
To,
like,
I will
open it and, like,
yeah,
skim
that's
through
what I mean.
It.
I've looked
yeah,
for, like,
and I'll go and be
just
like,
have to skim
oh, wait,
it. There's
what,
no point how, sitting down and reading that whole thing.
Yeah, it's
the first,
like,
the introduction is like, how to build a world. Why? Yeah, I know.
Unati, the whole DMG, I think, like, when they talked about like this new sort of like they're going to re-release these books, I am praying that they redo the DMG because as a book, right, like you said, there's no advice. It's just like, bam, big lengthy chapters. Like, it doesn't teach somebody to be a dungeon master.
Yeah, not at all. And just long kind of appendices with a list of gods and stuff that like don't make any sense without context at all. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the thing.
It makes 100%. It so inaccessible because, like, I'm definitely someone who, like, you know, I'm not, like, a voracious reader. I've never been able to do so. I've always found it much easier to, like, listen to things or whatever. And, like, the idea of being able to, like, of, like, picking up... It, like, if the only option, I think, for me to play Dungeons & Dragons was to pick up, like, the DMG and, like, comb through it and learn... I would have never got into Dungeons & Dragons before, ever.
100%. Like, even some of the players in High Rollers, the only reason that they got into into it was watching Critical Role, because they could finally watch something and they're like, oh, okay, I kind of get it now. I kind of get what playing a character is like. I can see what the dungeon master is doing and how they're, you know, describing scenes, and that means you can interact with things and blah, blah, blah. But if you expect somebody to sit down and read through a big chunky rule book just to start playing, I mean, yeah, that's going to be a barrier to entry.
I don't think it actually teaches you what makes D&D, like, which, I mean, what makes it special, right? Like, there are plenty of games and stuff out there with really fun and complex rule sets and whatever that don't hold a candle to D&D or, you know, some of these TTRPGs that we enjoy playing. The thing that makes the work so well is because you have the room to role play and to find connections with your friends and all of this kind of thing. And I think that actually... Yeah, if you just pick up the book, I think there is an opinion of like, oh, this is just, I'm going to basically just be doing a math game here. This is like, you know what I mean? Yeah. And like a math game with some like overwhelming lore. Like, because that's the thing as well I get when I read the DMG. I always, like Unati said about the gods, it's like, you sit there and go, wait, I've got to know like pantheons of gods? Not even like a set. I've got to know pantheons.
You don't get to learn through doing, like, which is like, whenever I've sat down to play, like, the way that you learn about the world is interacting with it. That's what's going to stick in your mind, not reading it. And even me, like, you know, I mentioned my story earlier of like, me and my friends, we bought the third edition starter set and we read the rules and then started playing. But we didn't like read through the entire rules. We got the gist through the rulebook aside. We're like, we'll make this up. And then as we played more and more, we would go and look by rules and say, actually, how does grappling work? Oh, okay, it works like that. Okay, and then you'd learn to play it. But we were a rare few because we were already nerds who were used to playing Warhammer, which again, you need to go and look up a big, thick rulebook. We would do things like LARP. So we knew vaguely what role playing was. But if you didn't have those contexts to apply... Yeah, it's not going to make any sense. But watching somebody, well, you can immediately pick up on the very basics, and then you can go and look up the rules and figure it out as you go.
The first point is, I think what we're saying in criticism of the Dungeon Master's Guide really could be applied to literally any game that exists. I cannot think of a single game where reading the rule book would give you a good idea of what the game is actually like. And that includes sports. Like, I think the reason that most people play sports is not because somebody handed them the rule book of football or basketball. It's because they grew up watching the people play. And then they learned from watching them play, having somebody else explain the rules with them, and then maybe joining a team.
Yes.
And I think what we're seeing with Dungeons & Dragons is now people are having the opportunity to see it being played and learn the way that people normally like to learn how to play games, which is by being entertained rather than sitting and studying the minutiae. And you can if you're into that, because there are certainly people who do, but I don't think most people want to. And I think that's true of simply all games.
And to go as well, like the point about having somebody teach you to play it, most of my, you know, I think back to when I started playing in third edition and some of the older friends I had, things like LARP and stuff like that, you know, when they learned to play D&D, it was an older brother or a guy in the local game shop who taught them how to play. You know, it was somebody who was the mentor figure who was like, our DM, I'll teach you to play and here's how the rules work. And yeah, like you said, Jeremy, it's like with sports, you know, you had like your dad would explain to you how football works and stuff like that, or you would have a mate who would explain it, you know, that kind of idea.
The second question, or the second let's see if I can remember, because it was an interesting point. Let me see if I can think of the second point that I was going to bring up. We were talking about I lost it. Let's move on.
It'll come back to it.
I'll ask another question, which is, I think this is relevant to I'm curious about this for all, I guess, public DMs. How has your preparation process changed, if at all, between playing a private game and then playing a public game?
You know, it's I don't want to sound facetious or anything. Genuinely, I haven't changed my process. The way that I prep my games that we do for High Rollers and the way that I would prep a game for private, there is no difference in the way that I prep them. And the reason is that, you know, with High Rollers, we have always, always strived to just play a game with a bunch of mates and the cameras are on, but we pretend that they're not. Like, it, for us, it is just our weekly D&D game. We just happen to record it and put it out there. And I know that there are definitely some arguments of like, well, you know, if you're streaming it and you're making money off it, is that really the case? It, can you still claim that it's just a game between friends? But the intent that when we sit down is the intent is not to sit there and make a show. We are sitting down to play a game that we then record and share with everybody else, and it just so happens that people really like it.
I do think that's part of the beauty of D&D, though, because I think there's a few times where, like, I've had that mentality when we've been on this show, and literally after 5 minutes I've forgotten I'm just playing. You know what I mean? Like, it's really hard to be in the mindset of, like, what's the most narratively interesting for the audience listening at home. Yeah, like, it's super hard to do that.
I think it is, but I think that there are definitely people out there who like that style of play, who are like, no, I want to make a show. I want to have this character arc. I want to, you know, tell this particular story. And that's a totally fine way to do it. It's not what I'm used to, because I spent, you know, 15, 20 years just playing D&D with my friends, and that's what I know to do best. I'm not going to try, even, you know, I was originally going to do the whole acting thing. I was going to go to drama school and do all, so I'm very thespian, British thespian boy who's going to go to drama school and all of this.
I think it works, right?
Like,
we all went
We all sprout mustaches.
Looks good on you, Nati. Wow, the mustache is
acting,
good.
Dear boy. Yeah.
You should curl that bad
absolutely.
Boy.
Get the big chin beard as well coming in for the Shakespearean roles. But I think that, like, you know, being actors and stuff like that, it does lend itself to just playing other characters. But despite that background, for me, D&D is just all about sitting down and playing a silly game with my friends. And it's why I like the role playing. It's why, like, my favorite bits of the game is when we get into like the really intense role play stuff. But I would be doing that if I was sat in my living room with, you know, like, you know, Doritos and Mountain Dew or whatever, in the same way that I would do it if I was in a studio with cameras and stuff like that. Like, it, for me, it's just the same experience. And yeah, so that's it. And, you know, maybe people will be like, well, is that really true? But that's 100% how I approach it. I just don't prep any different. I just prep as if it's my weekly game.
Do you find it easy to, like, forget that the cameras are there as well once you actually start DMing?
Yeah, it was a lot easier. So we've been, because of the pandemic and the big C, we shifted our play from in studio to online. So we've been playing via like a digital software. We've been using some really good software, and we've kind of transitioned to all playing at home. And it's actually harder to forget when I'm playing at home, because I can see the kind of the screen, and I do have Twitch chat open just in case there's any like issues and I need to be aware of. So I have that open. When we played in the studio, we would leave like all of that. Like, I would just play and the cameras are running and somebody else is handling like all of that stuff. So I was sat at a table playing D&D with my mates. Now that we're playing online, it's a little bit harder to forget, but most of the time I still do. Most of the time I'm just, you know, focused on what the players whatever madness they're trying to drag me through.
Whatever shenanigans they're up to.
I'm normally trying to put out fires. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I remembered what I was going to say.
Yes!
Oh, yes. Okay. I remember this was something that I don't know how I've never mentioned this on the show before, but one of the first things I ever saw of D&D was the gamers. It's like a 30-minute long, I think, or an hour long indie movie that some dudes made at their college. Like, and it's very, very much classic, like, third edition 3.5 D&D, where it's like, there's like a scene where the rogue pickpockets a guy's entire outfit, and like he's standing there in his underwear while he's having a conversation, and then they want to kill him because the guy's trying to pick a fight, so he sets up a ballista behind him because he just keeps rolling such high stealth checks. He has a full ballista behind this man inside of a bar. It's like, they did like a whole series. And the second one was literally, I think, prescient in a way, because it foresaw the issues that the game is having now, which is the main plot of that game concerns basically the conflict between story and character versus quest and loot. And so you have like this group of players who are primarily quest and loot type players with a DM who wants to be story and character, who brings in another player who has never played before, but also approaches it from story and character. And then you have all this internal conflict within the group. It's actually a pretty decent movie. It's called, I think, The Gamer's Darkness Rising. I think it's
of
pretty
course
good
it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course it is.
Yeah, of course it is. It's like the most quintessential title, right? 100%.
Yeah, but that's like that's the exact kind of that's a huge part of the conflict that you see in the game, like right now with I mean, this new evolved fifth edition that they're coming out with in 2024. It seems like they've been trying 100%. To balance that out as much as possible.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, even like the latest adventure, War Behind the Witchlight, I think is the first D&D adventure that I can remember that specifically goes out of its way to say you can complete this entire adventure without combat. Like, I don't think I've ever seen that in a D&D adventure before. And the fact that they've, you know, engineered the adventure to make that as a possible option absolutely highlights that. And I think that it's why that we're getting this kind of big discourse, because I feel that a lot of the older, you know, old school gamers, the kind of veteran gamers who want that loot and just they want to kill monsters and take their stuff and have, you know, silly fun, they are worried about that being taken away from them. Whereas at the same time, all the people that want story are now saying, but we want more. We want more out of this game than just killing monsters and taking their stuff. And that's why we're getting this like huge kind of conflict of interests.
Yeah, I'd be interested to like get your take on that as well, because I do think, like, from my money, I'm sitting there kind of going, this is like, that's like the bedrock of D&D. Like, it will never disappear. Even if they wanted it to, it won't. Like, it's the foundation.
You can just
of the
be thing. Like, 100%. Can I loot him? And then the DM will say, of course.
Yeah.
And then you loot him. I don't know.
Yeah. Like, the gameplay itself in the books is still focused around killing monsters, taking their stuff. Like, the book is 80% how to fight things. Like, it's not like the book has got like a massive section on like, you know, here's how to make friends. You know, it's like, no, here's how to cast fireball, here's how to swing swords, here's how to break into people's homes. You know, that's what it's all about. And that stuff's never gonna go away. I fully agree. I think that there's just this concern of you know, people kind of wringing hands about, you know, like, oh, but they're changing things, like they're gonna take it away. And it's like, no, I don't think they are. I think that stuff's always gonna be there if that's the game you want to play. And so many of these problems, you know, I go at, like, I see like D&D horror stories on Reddit and Facebook and stuff like that, and I swear to God 90% of them are resolved by just talking to the DM and establishing what kind of game you want to play before you start playing it. And if you go to your GM and say, listen, man, we don't want to do the whole like heavy RP moral quandary stuff, we just want to kill some like monsters and like find gold and like have stupid adventures, then the GM can be like, okay, cool, that's what I know you guys want to play, that's what we'll play. Whereas like if you if some of those players are like, actually I kind of want more of a story game, and the GM wants that, then they can say, okay, well, why don't we go find other people to play with, and we'll do that as another game. Like, we can have a story based game with people that are into that. And so many of these problems are resolved by just talking like adults.
Who'd have thought talking like adults?
Yeah, adult communication.
Yeah, that's it's a skill they should teach at school, maybe.
Yo, that would actually be a very useful class, though.
It really would be.
It really would.
Like, yeah, it would be incredibly useful. And have people from like different cultures and backgrounds come in and talk to you and be like, hey, if you go here and speak like this, this is how people might react. Like, it'd be useful. It'd be very useful.
So, let's take a quick break here, and then we will get back into it.
This HeadGum Podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers. Aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt. Mm-hmm. So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective, unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Halflings, I would like to thank our sponsor for today, Factor. With the busy season fast approaching, you might be on the lookout for some wholesome, convenient meals for a jam-packed days. I know that I do. One of my favorite things about having a ready-to-eat meal kit is the fact that I get a nice variety to my diet. It is so easy when you're busy and you're trying to look for nutritious food to eat to just eat the same things over and over again. Well, you don't have to do that anymore. Factor is here to help you. Skip the next trip to the grocery store, all the chopping and prepping and cleaning too, whilst getting all the flavor, nutrition, and quality that you need. Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are ready in just 2 minutes. All you have to do is heat and enjoy and get back to crushing your day. You can choose from over 34 flavor-packed meals per week, and the Calorie Smart meals come in at less than 550 calories per serving. And if you need a little extra boost in the day, there is an assortment of 45-plus add-ons that you can snack on, including breakfast items, including apple cinnamon pancakes, or as we like to call it, second breakfast. And just in case you need any more convincing, Factor offsets 100% of their delivery emissions and source 100% renewable electricity for all of their production sites and offices. Head over to factormeals.com/halflings50 and use the code halflings50 to get 50% off. That's the code halflings50 at factormeals.com/halflings50 to get 50% off. You are so welcome. Enjoy your tasty, nutritious meals for half price. Go now. What are you doing? Go, run. Go get the meals. Go.
Thank you to Angie for sponsoring this HeadGum podcast. Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well.
Indeed. So if you own a home, you know how much work it can take, whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality. It can be hard just to know where to start, but now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need.
Yeah, doing stuff yourself seems fun, but then you actually get to, you know, solving a problem and you realize that you can create 10 more problems, and then you probably should have just paid a professional to deal with it right off the bat.
You can easily injure and or maim yourself as well.
Yeah, you don't want to do that.
No.
Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. You just get the app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. It's very convenient.
It sure is, folks, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that.
So download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com. Thank you, Angie.
Angie.com.
Thank you. And we're back. Jeremy, you had two things that you wanted to say, I think. Is that right?
The first thing, I think, was that it seems like most of the shows that have gotten really popular, the actual play shows, have been more RP-oriented rather than hack and slash kill monsters, or at least more story-oriented. Certainly in the case of High Roller's Critical Role, Taz, Dimension 20, NADPOD, I think Dungeons and Daddies, like pretty much all of those, they'll certainly involve combat, but it seems like there's a big emphasis on like, let's look at our characters and let's develop the story and let's get invested in like what we're doing rather than, or in like who we are and how this affects us rather than just fight and kill, which is an interesting thing because it kind of contradicts the basis of the game. Like when it first started out, that wasn't really how people played. And so I think that's an ironic thing to note because like most of the classes and spells and abilities, and by most, like the vast majority are combat focused or combat oriented. How would you go about changing the game to maybe not lose that element, but to be more open to RP-focused adventures?
I mean, if anybody else has anything, feel free to jump in. You know, I don't want to just be Mr. Talking all the time.
No, that's what we're brought here to do.
You're the guest.
I just don't want to be rude. It's an interesting one, and just to go back to your first point as well, Jeremy. It's interesting that you consider high rollers to be like one of the more story driven things, because I guess when we sit down, like when I sit down to play, like high rollers, I would say maybe it's kind of like Critical Role in the sense that we do have combat, and some of that combat is like quite chunky, you know, mechanical. Like we are going to play the combat. I don't tend to do things like mega dungeons, but we do have a lot of combat, but. Certainly, like some of my players, they are not there trying to be like, I've got this dramatic story I wish to tell, and I'm going to tell it. Quite a lot of my players are like there to just crack dumb jokes and fight stuff. I think that what it is that they put a lot of care into the world, and we treat the game as not just a joke. Like the game world is like a place that they can go and explore and get invested in, and I think that that's like a big difference. Like I find it like a weird place. Like for me, I consider high rolls to be like a mixer of like story, gameplay, and then dumb jokes, and it's like a kind of mix of all the three. So I just found that quite interesting because I imagine that there's probably quite a few people who think the same thing as well, like that high rollers has got more of a story bend, because compared to a lot of D&D games, it probably does. It probably 100% does. But yeah, it's just an interesting one for me because I look at some of the actions my players do and I'm like, do they care about the story? I think they do. I think they care. They care about these characters. They care about these NPCs a lot, and I think that they like them. But do they care about this plot that I set up in this thing? I don't know. But yeah, there's definitely that going on. In terms of like the changing the game stuff, yeah, I think it's one thing. I think that if you're a D&D player who's like looking for ways to bringing more non-combat mechanics or like, you know, abilities or spells, play other RPG systems, first of all, because there's a lot of really good examples of how to handle stuff in other systems. One of the big things for me is I started playing the Fantasy Flight game Star Wars system. You can also get it as Genesis, which is like you can play it in any genre game. And the thing that taught me was all about success, not having to be pass and fail. Mm. You know, having played D&D for so long, for me, you roll a skill check, you beat the DC or you don't. And so you either succeed at what you were trying to do or you don't succeed. Whereas playing other RPGs, I've learned, you know, all about the whole kind of like degrees of success idea, which is like, oh, you passed at the check, you succeeded at the thing, but there's a complication to it. You got a complete success, you get everything you want, and here's a little bit more. Oh, you failed the check, but you were close enough that maybe you get a little something in return, or you failed it and there was something really bad, or maybe you succeeded, but you still get something bad, or there's a cost to it, or something like that. And I think implementing more stuff like that goes a long way to making the game feel more narrative and not just like, I hit the monster, I miss the monster, I cast fireball, I do X damage, blah, blah, blah. And that's one thing I try and do. And the DMG, as much as we were kind of criticizing it earlier, there is a variant rule in there, which is, you know, if I tend to use it, which is if the players fail a check by like a couple of points, like 2 to 3 or 5 points or whatever, you can say, well, you don't get what you want, but you do get this thing, or you get what what you want, but you have to pay a price in some way. Maybe you lose hit points. Maybe you lose a piece of equipment. Maybe that NPC is going to remember that you intimidated them and is going to try and get back at you later. You know, there's little guides for that and stuff. I think having more class abilities that are focused around stuff like social interaction and exploration would be good. That's like a huge way. Right now, I think if you look at a class, class's features and the subclass's features, probably 85, 90% of them are about doing damage or harming or doing some sort of status on a monster. You know, it'd be great to see more abilities. Like, there was a game I've been playing recently and it's based on the Powered by the Apocalypse stuff. And there was a move which is like, you can ask an NPC a question and they have to answer it truthfully. And it would be things like, what are you afraid of right now? What could I give you that will make you like me? And it's very specific questions like that. And so they're not that powerful. Like, you can't use them to just overcome like loads of issues, but they're a really cool thing for a player to be like, I'm going to cast Charm Person and I'm going to ask them, hey, what could I do for you that's going to make you like me? And that NPC then has to answer that truthfully. If Charm Person worked a bit more like that, I think people would understand it a bit better and use it a bit more and stuff like that. Or like if a bard could do that as like a special ability, like they could say, hey, I want to try and convince this person to do this thing for me, or like I want to figure out what this person is afraid of or something like that. We could see some cool stuff like that.
I think for me as well, it'll be about like breaking down these like social interactions a little more. Like, and I think Powered by the Apocalypse is a system that does that, definitely does that a little better, in that like right now in D&D, it's kind of like charisma. You know what I mean? Like, that's it. It's like your charisma stat. And if that happens to be a dump stat, which it probably will be for a lot of classes, like most of the martial classes, you know, don't need to have good charisma. End up with a situation where, and this is something that where I think I learned, because I learned through listening, I kind of learned to do something which I think is slightly better than the rules, which is like, if someone does like an incredible speech, like actually role plays in an incredible way,
yes,
like I will almost always either drastically reduce the DC or make them not roll at all, because I'm always that's one of my things I hate the most about it, is when you do something
nothing worse.
That epic, and part of me is like, yeah, you know, sure, there is like the variable element of like the environment, right? Like, you know, as you start your speech, someone could fart in the audience and it completely ruins the moment, you know, sure, that could happen. But also, like, is that going to be satisfying for your player who has just, you know, done this epic thing or said this epic thing? And I think there are other systems which do kind of handle that a little bit better. Like, even just like you said, like, you know, I like the idea of like being able to like stack your dice instead of like just adding a modifier, so there's like less variables, right? So like you can add, I don't know, it's like 3d6 to this roll or something because you're particularly proficient with it. So I'd be interested to see them try and just pull apart the social kind of element and the combat element, like to make the social elements as in depth, maybe not quite as in depth as the combat, because the combat is very in depth, but like even just to give it more of a look like combat, because I think that it is in a lot of instances. You can completely negate combat if you get good enough rolls, but it should be like you can negate combat if you really intelligent, like really kind of like deftly maneuver yourself out of a social situation. Like, if you know what they want, if you've taken the time to gather information on your enemy or whatever, you know, and you give, or you, you know, or you, like, you know what they want, so you can give them a really compelling reason to like not kill you or not try to kill you,
absolutely.
You know, you can go out and find something that you know they want, and therefore, because even like rolling with advantage, like there's still such a high chance you're gonna fail if you don't have like a plus 10 to persuasion, you know what I mean?
I hate how advantage in 5th edition, it feels like their band-aid fix is advantage and disadvantage. Like, oh, you did a cool thing, have advantage. Oh, you did a bad thing, have disadvantage. And it isn't like a really... I feel like it doesn't really convey that kind of nuance of that thing. It's not dynamic enough. No, absolutely. And also, you've just reminded me of another thing. I think that everything you're talking about, fully agree. And it also reminds me that I think one of the problems D&D has is, and this is kind of a cultural thing, or maybe it's a thing kind of left over from Legacy, it can still feel like a very combative DM versus players. There is, in D&D, there is not a lot of trust given to the players. And that's why there aren't abilities which just let the players do things, or let the players decide the narrative in some way, right? You know, in a lot of other systems that do tend to be a bit more RP focused, a lot of the abilities are the player gets to decide that they have an NPC contact that can help them out, or they get to decide when they get to add something to the environment that's going to help them, or they get to add a fact or do a flashback or do something that can change the narrative of the game. And D&D is like, no, the DM does that. The DM decides all of that. And I think that that's where you get this very sort of DM versus players, or like, you know, everything has to be a role. Everything has to be a check, you know, because it's like a competition in some way. And it's like, well, is it though?
Yeah, I'd actually be kind of interested to ask Inati, just because I know that you give a lot of license to your players. Like, whenever I've played in your games, or like whenever I've heard of your games, or you've had Tales from the Table, like, and we've talked about like Mfatane or something, like the amount of agency that you give to your players is wild. I really enjoy it, and I think your players enjoy it too. Like,
it just means I get to sit back a bit, I think. And also, I'm lucky in that most of my players tend to mix my tables with seasoned players and then not so seasoned players. Like, there'll always be like three or four who know, like, you know, two or three who know what they're doing, and then two or three who are new or whatever the case may be, or have heard about it. So that, like, they all learn from each other and I don't have to carry this entire thing, right? Like,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, and we can share the load and collaborate. So if all of a sudden you start doing something cool, I'm like, right, yeah, that happens. Make a note that
happened.
Cool.
I'm going to use that later.
Right. And then just keep going with the story. And it just makes for way more fun games, in my opinion. And my players just want to keep coming back because they want to see what the hell happens from their foolish choices. And I'm like, make some more and I'll punish you again.
It's collaborative, right?
Oh, Natty, yes, speaking my language. I love it. Consequences.
Really dungeon master. All meanings of the term dungeon master in this relationship.
Make more dumb choices.
Yeah, I love it.
Good.
But it's, I think collaboration, right, is like the heart of it, I think, is what we're saying, is that, like, me and Inati studied on the same course at drama school, not the same year, but in the same course, and a lot of that, like, is literally in the title of the course, was collaborative. And I think that, like, for me, collaboration has always enriched my work. You know what I mean? Like, whenever I have said, like, oh, I've got a cool idea, would you mind having a look at this? Like, I don't think I generate anything in the D&D sphere without Jeremy looking at it first. Like, I literally text Jeremy with every homebrew thing I ever make, being like, dude, how's this look? And
You have to, right? Because, like, you can only see it from one angle, and other people are always going to see it from a different way. And I totally get that there are a lot of players out there. I have a player who, you know, if I were to just suddenly throw something in their way and say, hey, come up with this, or like, hey, give me an idea for what this is, they would be like, oh, I don't know. Some players don't want to have that agency. Some players don't want to be that creative. They just want to be kind of fed something and then react to it. But they should have that choice. And that's the thing, is I think that in 5th edition D&D and some RPGs, D&D assumes that they shouldn't get the choice when actually maybe the option should be there if they'd like to. So, like, you know, in a Nazis game, being able to say, like, well, you tell me, you know, what does this look like? How does this work? Yeah, sure, that works. 100% that works what you want to do, because I'm going to use that later to create some more cool story and game for you to do. Like, that's for me, the joy of it. Like, I wish my players did that more. Like, I wish they could come to me and say, like, yeah, I want to do this thing. Like, can I do this? Blah, 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 blah. And I'd be like,
Oh, no, you go.
Okay. And I always find it super fun when it's like a new player at my table finally goes, oh, I get it now. And then, like, starts bringing stuff. Yes. And you're like, yes! Yay! Yes. Get it!
I love it. I don't know about you, but, like, When you have a new player in seasoned players, and you know, the seasoned players are very good at letting the new player find their feet and their wheels, and it's that look on the new player's face where they're like, so I can do anything. Could I, like, I want to, like, pick up the table and throw them out the window? Or, like, they do something which, like, in the rules makes no sense, or, like, there's no rules for it, but they just figure something in the narrative and they want to do it, and you're like,
yes,
you've got it. This is the game, like, 100%.
It's unbelievably satisfying. I had an instance where my rookie player from my chaos group saved the entire party, to the point where, like, the seasoned players were like, we're dead, we're gonna die, that's it, we're out, we're dead, like this. And then my rookie player, who was playing a rogue, just came up with some crazy shenanigans and it would just save everyone. It was just the most joyous thing. We were all just, like, cheering, you know, like, so it was just an amazing moment. And to go back to what we were saying, I think what's really cool here about the idea of giving player agency, the one thing that I think that maybe they would then need to look at if this was something they were thinking about incorporating into like a 5.5 or other TTRPGs that might include this, is I do think we got to lay some ground rules, but purely because I think you don't want to have like the land speeder example every week. You know what I mean? Because it would get a little bit
100%.
So I think just even knowing like, hey, look, this stuff, free reign, go crazy, go wild, do whatever you want. This stuff, run it by me first. I'm not saying no, but let me know. Like check in with me and then we'll see.
This is why I'm a big fan of systems that I like rules. Like a lot of people think like when we talk about like narrative like RPGs, it's like, well, you don't want any rules. Why don't you just make everything up? I'm like, no. You don't understand. I love rules. It's a framework. Mm-hmm. It's a guideline. It gives you the roller coaster tracks that, that you can then lay out, and you know the players can determine which track they want to move on to and which way they want to go and all this kind of stuff. I like the rules. There needs to be a framework. There needs to be a guideline. But those rules can still give the players meaningful choices, and they can still give them ways to create story and narrative without necessarily the DM having to be too involved. Like there's a lot of games that do this. A lot of Powered by the Apocalypse games. It will be like once per session, you get to decide how this thing, you know, affects your character, or you get to decide how this thing works. Or in, say, the Star Wars RPG, you actually have these story tokens and you only have a set amount of them. And every time you use one, the GM gets it, gets a point in it. But you can use those things to say like, oh, I'm going to find an emergency med pack that we desperately need because our guy's dying. I'm going to spend a story point and I find an emergency med pack to use to heal the guy, right? Yeah. But then the DM gets that point and then they can later spend that and say, oh, well, when you're looking, you know, this contact that you want to meet up with, turns out that they've been followed by a bounty hunter and I'm going to spend a point to insert this thing that's going to complicate it, right? By introducing like a framework like that, it feels fairer for the players. It feels fairer for the GM. It's not just to like, we can make up whatever we want and no consequences or bad things ever happen to us because we get to decide it. But it gives the players a lot more choices and agency. I think that a lot of people have this bad reaction when you talk about narrative games like, oh, well, just make everything up. It doesn't matter. Why even roll dice? And that misses the point, I think. Like, you want to find that balance between the two.
I mean, have you ever tried to be creative in a void? Like, have you ever walked into a white room and it's just hard. Come up with stuff? Like, it's impossible.
Yeah.
Like, I always said it, like, all throughout drama school.
Second
all
year
since
of
I've left,
drama school.
Yeah. Well, actually, yeah, I think I actually have done it.
You just
and
pulled
it,
me
it
back
fun.
To trauma. It was very hard. And I just went, wow, that was hard. That was
Here
hard.
Is
that was,
a white space. Yes, that was, you are dressed all in hard. Black.
Yeah, Go. Yeah, yeah. And I remember how bad okay. the thing I made was. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Being like, this actively sucks. Really this is bad. Hard. But, like, I remember always used to be, I literally used to the point where, like, I remember when my like teachers told me to like keep my feet still. Like just literally being in a box, I find makes me so much more creative. Like it means that I actually think, and I actually then try to find like an interesting way of getting outside of the box, or do you know what I mean? Doing something interesting within the box. And I think that trying to do anything in a void or in a vacuum is nearly impossible. So like you need to set yourself like a really strict set of like tent poles. Like I always do it when I'm like when I'm starting creating a new world. Like I literally started devising a new high magic world yesterday, and I started I was literally sat there for like hours going, why am I'm really struggling, and I went, okay, right, what are the pillars of my world, like what am I gonna have, what is the world, like how many, you know, like how big's the world, how small is the world, what, you know, what is the all-powerful magical thing? And as soon as I got myself that little framework, suddenly it was and the ideas just came, like, do you know what I mean, came flowing out, and it was amazing. But as soon as you take that away, like this could, oh man, it's so hard.
This can so easily turn into just like new campaign sort of like freaking out and like talking about stuff, because I'm in the process of doing my new campaign thing as well, so I'm in the same boat right, where it's like that new exciting like and I always talk about it. People ask me questions in like Twitch streams and like at panels and stuff, and for me it's like, for me, world building is a process of asking and answering questions, right? So like when you start with that slate, and those questions then become the framework, the rules that you build around. So it's that thing of like, for you, it's like, okay, what is the grand magic thing that rules over? Like, what's the government like? Okay, well, if I'm going to have a mageocracy that runs this entire kingdom and everything's run by the mages, what does that mean? How does this work? How does the military work? How does the sanitation work? How do they get enough food for farming? What are the enemy nations like? And you start asking these questions, and as you answer them, that builds the world and then leads to more questions. Okay, well, if the military is like this, then is there a rebellion? You know, is there a rebel faction? How do they work? Like, and you just start building all this stuff out. But you've created that box. You've given yourself that box to then start building out from and adding more boxes to that you can then hop between and like build a fort of boxes.
Yeah, build yourself a box fort. That's like that's how to make worlds for sure.
It's it even works.
I love it.
It even works with character great creation. Like if you want to make like a slightly more detailed character, or even just like a character where you can be like, oh yeah, I come from here, I want this and blah blah blah. It's like, oh, okay, I want to be playing this and this. But then there's the question of like, okay, so you come from a small town. Why did you leave? What happened to the small town? Do you have a family?
Yes.
Do you have any friends? Why are you here? Like, do you want? Is this where you want to be? And I think it can seem overly complicated. This actually happened for the actual play show that we're releasing right now, Outlaws and Obelisks. When I was talking to Connie about their character, and initially I was like, "Cool, so I want this, and this." And Connie was like, "Whoa, that's a ton of stuff." And I was like, "It sounds like more things than it is, because really, it's just like I came from here." Yeah. I came from a small town. I'm here trying to make enough money to go back and help my parents like floundering peach business. But secretly, my passion is dance, and I'm hoping that I can get a fellowship with like the local break dance troupe.
There you go.
And so many questions, like, and so many cool things that character can then build off and into, you know, and like ways for that character to go. Just on those,
I think it allows for probably my favorite thing when it comes to being creative, which is happy accidents. It is like the most satisfying thing that happens, which is when you're answering a bunch of questions. And like, I literally had it last night when I was building this world, and I had basically three major factions, and I suddenly was like, oh, those two are related. Ah, sweet. You know what I mean? Like, it was like, it just made so much sense. It was like a glaringly obvious thing where they were like two sides of the same coin and they're about the same age. And I was suddenly like, oh shit. Yeah, that's going to be cool. Yeah. That's fun. That's really cool. You know?
And it builds cool story. Yeah. I love that. 100%. Love it.
And, like, I definitely am absolutely down for just doing a world building chat with you, because
start into like a world building mini side thing that we've started doing.
You're gonna have to join us.
Yeah,
both,
you should.
Which is very cool.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Just send me the details.
We'll just send you a Zoom link a random time during the day.
A Zoom link in a time.
I was talking to Mercer about this recently, like, because we had like a catch up recently, and we both have the same problem that most of our friends, like our close friends, are our players. So we can't talk about the exciting things we've got planned, or like the cool stuff that we can't tell them, because it's going to spoil stuff for the game, or it's going to spoil stuff for the world. So we're in this phase where we talk to each other about it, because we can be like, oh man, I've got this really cool thing planned, or like, oh man, I'm building this subclass that I'm going to reveal, and this so-and-so's character is going to use it, but the others don't know about it. And you can't, you know, you just want to talk and tell people about that stuff and just get excited about it, right? So it's always a really fun thing to just get with other DMs and just splurge about like your world that you're building, and this, I've created a faction which is like a newspaper, but they're all messengers and they travel around and they're secretly feeding information to blah blah blah, and like you know, you just want to get excited about that stuff.
Nothing better than when a DM goes like, oh, so it's like this, and you go, oh, it is like that. I didn't think about it that way.
I was recently in the US for like avoiding the multiple lockdowns, like subsequent lockdowns that Britain had, and every time I was preparing for a session for Three Black Halflings, I would walk out into the living room and tell my mom the ideas that was happening. She knows nothing about D&D. So I would be like, okay, so they're going to meet a bunch of baboons this time. And she's like, oh, okay. Which one is this?
Okay,
like,
cool.
Does that sound cool? She's like, yeah, I guess. I like it. And I was like, great. Thanks, mom.
I had the exact same thing with Jade. Again, last night when I was planning this new world, and I was like, and I explained the world, and she went, you know, I'd quite like to help you research this. And I was like, oh, this must be good. Like, oh shit, this must be good. Yeah. Like, I piqued your interest. Like, that's insane.
Yeah. when you pique the partner's interest and they're like, oh yeah, I really like that. I had that with my fiance Nina, and I told her about the big bad of our current campaign in High Rollers Erois. She knows a lot of things about and it's like, oh my God, I created a monster when I accidentally described this villain as being a bit sort of like Tom Hiddleston meets Kylo Ren, and like all of like a bunch of my my players and like my fans say, were just like, sorry, what? I feel the same way, Unadi, but it's like they were thing. Just in love. And I know. And now they've now like made them out to be this like sexy space hunk that like, and I'm like, that's not what I want. That's not what I want. He is a wanker. Yeah. He's 100%. He's a space wanker.
Yes, you've described the ultimate space wanker.
Yeah, I know.
That's the episode title right there.
The ultimate space wanker.
I'm not going to give that to Jeremy as a nickname. That's
Jeremy,
fair.
I'm ultimate that one out. Space wanker Cobb.
Or well, maybe I should. Maybe.
Oh, that was
visceral.
That is very funny. Speaking of hunks, though, has anyone watched What If?
Yes.
You know, the Winter Soldier, I was like, whoa! the animator for the Winter Soldier, whoever animated him was like, clearly look, was, I'm gonna give you all a gift. I was like, holy shit.
Cool, I'm in.
I mean, Bucky in live action's doing okay, but this guy.
I need to rewatch this. Yeah. I don't remember.
Like, he literally turns around like, in the shower, and I was like, whoa! I do not consider myself.
I need to rewatch What If now. I completely missed the sexy Winter Soldier stuff.
There's got to be. Okay, listen. There's some people listening who know exactly what I'm talking about. Please sound off in the comments of wherever you're listening to this or on Twitter or whatever about sexy Winter Soldier, because it's so real. It's so real.
Amazing.
I guess to take us further, if I may, off track, because one thing that we always do. In fact, actually, does anyone have any other questions? Because I'm aware of the time, but I would love to do. We have to get this one last thing. But if anyone has
this
any
is,
questions.
I was just curious. How did you meet Matt Mercer?
Oh, yeah.
Oh yeah, so the story goes back a long ways, and I think I can talk about it now because for a while I kind of kept quiet on it when stuff was going on. But so for those of you who don't know, like back in the day, Matt used to be a pretty big US cosplayer. He was really into the cosplay scene, and I've always been a huge anime manga nerd. And here in the UK, I've been superly involved in the anime convention scene and used to do loads of cosplay and do like cosplay masquerade judging and stuff like that and host events and. You know, as a teenager, like, you know, not even a teenager, like a young sort of 20s man, you know, Matt was like, I was like, man, I want to be as good as this guy one day. Like, his costumes are amazing. I hope I get to meet him one day. And I messaged him on like an old cosplay website just to say, hey, man, I love your costumes. And he wrote back a very sweet message. And I always remember he started it off in such a merciful way. He started off with, thank you for the kind words, friend. And it was just like the
Matt
most Matt thing he could say.
Wholesome and lovely? No.
But, yeah, he replied back and we got talking and like, you know, I think he mentioned like, you know, oh, you know, I'm so glad you liked it. I have to run now. I've got a D&D game to prepare. And then the next time we spoke, I was like, man, I didn't know you played D&D. I love D&D. And we made friends on that. And then I would eventually I went out to LA for an anime convention out there, Anime Expo, and we met up. And he was just like, oh, you're Mark. And we got kind of made friends and stuff. And we just kind of became friends that way. And then when he started doing the voice acting stuff, I would, me and some friends who ran conventions here would get him invited over as a guest to the UK to come and like be a guest at the conventions, but also so that we could hang out with him. And whenever he would come over, we would hang out and share stories. And it was at these conventions, he started telling me about the Vox Machina games that they did before they streamed. So he was like telling me about all the stuff that was going on. And then eventually it led into Crit Role. But like, it was just this weird thing that like, we both kind of met through this cosplay stuff and then we just kind of became internet friends, right? And then it just kind of lingered and it stayed on throughout the whole time. And, you know, we've often kind of quite frequently kind of treat each other like brothers. Like he's like, I consider him like a big brother because he's always like been there and like he's been heavily involved in a lot of big parts of my life and stuff like that and vice versa. So it's been this very wholesome, like I always say, yeah, I look up to him, like him doing Crit Role and the way that he portrays himself online and stuff is like something I definitely aspire to kind of like hopefully match up to, because I do think he's a good boy. He's a good lad.
Yeah, he's a good lad. He's a wholesome boy. A British person on he's a good lad. that's how I describe people. Yeah, yes. No, but that's such a lovely thing, and I genuinely can't express how similarly I felt about this last year doing Through Like Halflings. I don't know if the other halflings feel the same, but like, I feel like I have made some genuine connections with some people who I have never met. And like, we've got like, an event, which I don't think we've been announced, so we can't really say anything about it yet, but I know I'm going to meet some of these people, and I'm like, oh, I'm just so overwhelmingly excited about it. Because it does just feel like this strange new thing where I think I was actually talking about it with my fiance. I need to get better at saying that now. It's a recent thing, which is why I'm not so good at saying it. But I was talking about this with Jayden saying how, yeah, it's weird. Like, we kind of need to start talking about it like it's just a normal way of meeting people nowadays. Like, it's not a new, not a particularly odd thing. Like, I think a lot of my best friends, we either stay in touch online or we kind of interact online. And a lot of them I've never met before now. Like, especially because of the pandemic. Yeah. Like, it's...
Well, and to go back to something we mentioned right at the start, like, D&D in the UK has only really recently become a bigger thing. So a lot of the people who are involved in it, a lot of the people that, like, most of my, I would consider, like, D&D industry friends are in the US. And, like, I've met them from doing the events and stuff like there, out there and stuff like that. Up until recently, like, there hasn't been a lot of other people in the UK to talk to about it because, you know, this is really just a growing hobby for us. And it's really now hitting that zeitgeist and it's exploding. And more people are getting involved and, you know, we get to meet and catch up in ways like this. But yeah, it's 100% a natural thing. And I think in the nerd sphere, more than ever, 100%. Like, this is most of my friends, I think, you know, back in my cosplay days, you know, all of my friends I met on online message boards. And then we would meet up at conventions once a year and things like that. And like, even like my LARP group that I go LARPing with now, like, we all met online because we were like, hey, I'm kind of interested in doing this. Is anybody else up for it? Yeah, I'd give it a go. Sure, that sounds kind of fun. And then they kind of came along, and now it's like our little sort of four times a year vacation away from the modern world of just like, I need to be in a field in a tent pretending to be a wizard. I just need that. I need that right now.
That sounds great.
I need to be dressed in cool costumes and running around with swords.
Yeah, I need to. That's definitely something I'm going to pick your brains about, because I definitely need to cosplay more. Like, I literally, one of my favorite things to do when I was a nerdy teenager was dress up for like no reason. Like, my old teacher frequently reminds me of a day that I, for some reason, bought a Kick-Ass costume, like the literally for like from Kick-Ass, and I just wore it to college one day. I came in, sat down in my class, and everyone was like, "Huh? Why?
Why?"
And I was like, had the mask on and everything. It was just like, yeah.
Oh my god!
Eventually, my teacher was like, "Maybe if you could take the mask off, like that." And I was like, "Oh right, okay, yeah, sure." But it's so funny. Like, whenever I talk to people, I'm like, "Oh yeah, Jasper's kind of cool," and I'm like, "Nah, that's a recent thing." Like, I used to be so weird and awkward. Like, I used to do.
You don't understand. The nerd is still inside. Here. Like, the nerd's never gone
and
away.
As soon as I get around my people, like, you won't even recognize me. You know what I mean? Because it's...
Dude.
Stuff like
100%.
That.
100%. See, this is... You tell me stuff like this, Jasper, the next thing I'm going to be DMing you and saying, like, so this LARP that I go to, you should come and check out the pictures from it and you should consider it. Because there's... I think if you enjoy cosplay and you enjoy D&D and you're an actor, you would get such a blast out of it.
I'm worried like, I won't 100%. Leave the field, to be honest, Mark. You'll have to drag me away. You're like, no, I don't want to go back to reality.
That's a possibility.
It sucks.
Yeah, that's definitely a reality.
Oh, amazing. Well, speaking of reality and getting as far away from it as possible, one thing that we always end our interviews with is we ask for a tale from the table. Now, a tale from the table, usually in Three Black Halflings' world, is like the wildest and wackiest thing that you can think of. But it can also be, it can be something heartfelt, it can be something like epic as anything.
Oh,
we've had some unbelievable stories, we've had some ridiculous stories, we've had some hilarious ones. So, Mark, if anything that sticks out in your mind, it can be from High Rollers, Home Game, whatever you want.
My goodness. I mean, from High Rollers, I feel like there's just too much. Like, there's so much stuff that happens on a weekly basis that is both insane or wholesome or heartfelt or epic. There's too much. There's a story I always come back to for things like podcasts and interviews. And it's actually from when I was a kid playing in our home games. And this was like a campaign that my friend ran for like a year or something like that. And this is back in third edition D&D. And that's important because you need to know that in third edition D&D, it was considerably easier to die.
Right.
For a year-long campaign, I went through something like 12 characters because I would pretty much die once a month in this campaign. And it wasn't because the DM was out to get me. It was just intense. Bad luck combined with my own reckless actions. You know, as Unetti mentioned, it was like, I am the player that will just do something crazy and wild, and then the consequences will come and destroy me.
Is there like a mechanic that just is like a particular...
There's a bunch of different ones. So in third edition D&D, you saving throws, so like you know, saving throws from fifth edition. Back in third edition D&D, there were many, many, many abilities where if you failed your saving throw, you were dead, or you were petrified, or you were permanently banished to the astral plane. Like and it would literally be one roll. Oh, I got a one. Well, you're dead. Character sheet, please. And like there was like, you know, you could be resurrected. You could be have
rescued
all these other
from
things.
The Nether Realm,
but the
whatever,
other thing that but the other thing is, if you were resurrected, you came in at the lowest level of the party, and that could mean that you would lose XP. So that means that like you could come in at like level 12, and like the rest of the party are at level 15, and you're still fighting like level 15 enemies. So you're gonna probably die again. And again, this is all relevant because I was having this string of character deaths, and eventually I was like, man, okay, look, I was like, this character, though, I've got this really... And keep in mind, I was like 17. I was like, I've got this really cool character, and they're definitely not going to die. They're this edgy elf assassin, and he's given up his soul into this weapon that's like, you know, gotten stronger because he's given it his soul, and he's called Void, and he's really super edgy, like mega edgy. Like, this guy would wear a black leather trench coat, and he would have like finger claws and stuff like that. Like, this was like so edge, you wouldn't believe. But I built the stats, and I kind of min-maxed him a lot, and he had something ridiculous, like a plus 20 to intimidate. And the idea was that his reputation was so good that like he could just say a word and people would be like, and like they'd run away
from
him.
Or the minimum being a 21. Yeah, I'm not surprised for intimidation. Yeah.
It was like crazy, right? So I built this character and the DM was like, okay, well, they're in the middle of this dungeon. We'll have your character come in the next session. I was like, yeah, great. And the players were all running away from like this fortress full of guards, and they ran into a room and it looked like they were going to have to fight them. And then the DM had my character basically like swing in, smash through the window. I landed and I described it like cool as like his black cloak. It was really ridiculous. This is like mega teenage edge. And he like looks up and I just said, can I just roll an intimidate check to see if they know who I am? And he was like, yeah. And I was like, natural 20, that's like a 42. And he was like, yeah, the entire guards are just like, oh my God, it's Void. And then they ran away, and all the players were like, holy shit, who the fuck is this guy? Like, oh my God. And then the DM's like, and the DM's just like, as you guys are having this conversation, a hole appears in the ground and a beholder flies up into the room. And this was expected. We knew that there was a beholder in the room. So we're like, okay, let's have this badass fight. Literally, roll initiative. Beholder goes first. Petrification ray, Void, natural one, you're turned to stone. The rest of the players were like, well, we don't know that guy, carry on.
Oh, and then
this character was just completely like left in the dead, and I just threw the character sheet away, and I was like, okay, cool. Next character.
He's just a statue.
So and it was just like, it was just the massive like natural 20 intimidate. Like everyone's like, oh my God, this guy's a badass. And I was like, and I'm sitting there like, I can get my AC to like 38 if I want to for a turn. And I can do all this like min max power game stuff. Natural one, petrification ray, turn to stone, party, don't care.
So like, funny.
Just move straight
on. Oh no.
That's a story that will always linger in my mind.
I had a very similar experience with my edgy Genasi rogue that I played in Jeremy's game, where I was trying to play like the coolest character that I could, and I remember we were...
Your theme song was the Batman theme from The Dark Knight.
Yeah, from The Dark Knight. Yeah, that was what I picked. Yeah.
Okay, nice.
And Mark, it makes you feel any better. This was like... 2 years ago. But I remember like the like second session, might even been the first session.
It was the first
He was like, oh, I'm going to, the party was all like setting up camp, and I was like, oh, I'm going to like sleep in the tree because I'm cool and edgy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm grumpy and I'm not going to hang around with the rest of the party, you know? And then I we went up in this tree, and then during the night, the party got attacked by bats. And I was like, hey, Jeremy, can I tie a rope and then swing out of the tree and attack the bats? And Jeremy was like, yes. Mm-hmm. And I was like, woohoo! Natural one.
And I of course, Jeremy, the dice know. The dice know.
Getting, like, snagged on the rope. So yeah. I'm pretty sure I ended up, like, my boot got wrapped around the rope. So as I, like, dropped out the tree, I ended up upside down, smacking into the tree, and then just got caught in the middle of the swarm of bats, just getting wailed on.
Almost died.
Upside down. It was just ludicrous. I feel this so hard.
I feel like dice have some sort of supernatural ability to know exactly what you want to happen and what should happen. And they know exactly what those things are, and they will have those results. Yeah, 100%.
And one way or another, do you know what I mean? Like, oh, you've got advantage. Okay, we'll see about that.
Doesn't matter. You can still roll two ones with advantage. You can still roll two ones.
All the time, and I don't know how many times that happened in The Cub and the Caterpillar, which is our first actual play we did. I roll this same number with advantage and disadvantage, rolled exactly the same. It happened to me constantly, didn't it?
Two 14s, two 17s, over
two 7s, all the time. All the time. It was wild. Absolutely wild.
That same character that Jasper was just talking about also had another run-in while climbing a tree with a parrot.
Oh, yeah.
I think he got pooped on.
Taking a crap on me.
Yeah. Man, and then stealing an item.
That character definitely just needs to avoid trees.
Oh, yeah, it stole my sword.
Yeah, he tried to, like, attack it, and he threw your sword at it.
And then the parrot took a crap on me and ran off and flew off with my sword. And the party didn't know this encounter was happening and just saw me running past him like, give me back my sword! And that was... And they were like, oh, I guess we should go follow him.
And if you'd been trying to play, like, a really comical, ridiculous character, you would be the coolest, most badass character ever existed.
Yeah.
But the second you try and be edgy and badass, the dice just go,
no. Oh, man, so funny. Love it. So funny. And Mark, thank you so much for being here. This has been a total blast, and
it's been amazing. Thank you guys for inviting me to come on and have a chat. It's been really lovely talking to you and just getting to hang out.
I think that we're gonna have to do some more stuff with people in Britain.
Absolutely. We can definitely make some stuff happen. We also have lots of we have some very familiar contacts with certain companies that we can maybe get to help us do some cool stuff as well.
I like the way you're thinking. That's good.
I recently just did a big thing with Comic Relief up at Warwick Castle, where we got to play D&D at Warwick Castle. And if I can get a bunch of UK D&D people to go and do that again, because that was the coolest thing I've ever done. Yeah. I was just like, we need to make that happen with more people.
I'll be there with bells on. Like, that sounds amazing.
You have my sword and my axe.
Excellent.
And my rope, which I use for climbing trees.
It is frayed and will snap at any moment.
Absolutely. Yeah. It was an old rope. But Mark, please, for anyone who is absolutely out of their minds and had listened to this show but doesn't listen to all the stuff that you do, please tell the people where they can find your stuff. Feel free to plug whatever you want.
Please, not at all. It's one of those things where, like, it's that awful, like, you know, the shows aren't very well known, so I'm very grateful to take the opportunity to talk about them, because, like, it's always, I feel like no matter how much you talk about something, people still just never hear about it. If you don't know me, I do a show called High Rollers D&D. We've been running for about 5 years. We stream every Sunday at 5 p.m. UK time, which is about 9 a.m. For those out on the Pacific Coast on Sundays.
UK time. Come on,
5 p.m. UK time. So after your Sunday dinner, come and watch some D&D, and we stream over on twitch.tv/highrollersDND. You can also follow the campaign on YouTube, Spotify, podcasts, all of that. It's all under the same name, High Rollers D&D. That's like my baby. It's what I've helped build from the get-go, and it's the one I always push. We're actually in our second campaign right now, which is in a kind of sci-fi, Final Fantasy, magi-punk kind of world. They're level 16. They are fighting gods and space wankers and all of this kind of stuff. So come and check that out, and then we'll be starting up new projects fairly soon as well, but come and check out High Rollers D&D. You can also catch me on the Wizards of the Coast D&D channel DMing Knights of Evening Star, which is like a show I produce for Wizards D&D with a bunch of really awesome people, Mika Burton, Nate Sharp, Jonathan Inovino, and Anna Prosser as well. Really, really cool game with those guys, all set in Cormyr in the Forgotten Realms, and it's all about, like, managing a small village/kingdom. And that's Knights of Evening Star. And then just my own stuff. I have YouTube, Twitter, Twitch, all of that good stuff, which I'm slowly spinning up and doing a bit more on as well, including hopefully some D&D on my own Twitch channel, Sherlock_Humes. And that's where you can find me. Sherlock_Humes is pretty much where I am everywhere. Yay. Sherlock Humes.
A very good YouTube channel I should throw out there. Yeah,
very informative. Oh, no, very
a YouTube channel that I really need to make more content for. Like, I go through these phases where I'm like, yeah, I'm going to make all this stuff. 6 months, nothing. Yeah, I'm going to make loads of stuff. And then, like, you know, it's like bursts of content, basically. I feel that's so hard. Like,
it's hyper-focus, if you will. Is it hyper-focus?
Hyper-focus, very short-term hyper-focus. Okay.
It doesn't last. You just have to really capitalize on it.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Mark, thank you so much for being here. And if there's anyone that's new that's listening to this and hasn't heard too much of our stuff, we're obviously Three Black Halflings. You found the podcast. Congratulations. You can also find us on social medias at TB Halflings, and we have a Patreon, which is patreon.com/TB Halflings, where you can find things like campfire chats where we dig into Outlaws and Obelisks and all of that kind of stuff. And we have merchandise, which I love so much. But I think that is about everything for this week's episode. So, as always, so long, Shire Folk!
So long, Shire Folk!
So long, Shire Folk!
And of course, it is about that time that we thank some amazing patrons. We've had a huge amount of patrons join the Patreon over the last few months. It has been truly sensational. So glad you're all here. I hope you're enjoying the, especially the Outlaws and Obelisks content. If you're enjoying Outlaws and Obelisks, by the way, feel free to check out our Patreon. It's patreon.com/TB Halflings. But why don't I thank some of our incredible patrons who have given to us this month. So I would like to start with Austin Steiner. Thank you very much. Susan Rolfe. Just Robert. Very simple. Keeping it simple, Robert. Brian Farina. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. I like that name. Farina. I feel like I might put that in a fantasy game somewhere in one of my many worlds. Mandy Waller, Michelle Spurgeon, Erica Bayenkia. Bayenkia? That's, again, excellent. Coming strong with these names, patrons. Love it. Mallory Boone, Sierra Sierra Bile. I'm going to go strong and wrong on that one, I think. Who knows? Athena Hughes, Elias Esgadali, Kenji Shoemaker, The Sandrian, Sam Lecane, Ethan Frank, Jen... I'm not actually too sure how many ends I did there because I didn't do sort of separate ends. I guess it would have been Jen, but then I feel like I'm starting up a car or something. Heather Scoville, Kyle Delan, Joe F, and Kelly Craigthon. Craigthon? Craigton. Kelly Craigton. Thank you so much, patrons. Can't tell you how much your support means to us, and we will see you next week. Bye-bye.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.